90 minutes down, 90 minutes to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Chris King. Chris is the Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations. Of course, he's also a former Winnipeg Jets player 1.0. Chris, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us and welcome back to the program.
Gentlemen, always a pleasure to be on with you guys.
Thank you. Chris obviously brought you on to talk about a number of the pressing issues that are gaining the attention of hockey fans throughout the world, and you know, certainly the Department of Hockey Operations. You know, I wanted to start with goaltending equipment, because we've been hearing a lot about the size of goaltending equipment and the lack of scoring in the game, and people, you know, making a saying that one is associated with the other. You know, why or how do you think that this new mandate to change goaltenders' equipment is any different than has been discussed in the past?
Well, I think you hit it on the head with your last comment. This isn't new. I mean, this is, I've been with the league 15 years, and it's been a conversation we've had at every general manager's meeting. I was going through some of Dave Dryden's old files back from the early 80s, and they talked about goalies being too big. So this isn't something new. You know, goal scoring is down a little bit. It's not down a ton. Personally, you know, I don't have a big opinion on this other than the fact that I think the game's great right now. I think that the athletes are incredible. The coaching's so good. And I think the goaltenders are some of the best athletes on the team now, which they weren't 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, for sure. So that's all part of it. But, you know, in light of the size of goaltenders, A, they're physically getting bigger. They're 6'6 and 6'7. I mean, in the finals last year, you had Darling, Crawford, and Bishop, and then the other fellow, the Russian kid, they're all over 6'5. I mean, those are big goalies, and the nets haven't gotten bigger. So there's right away they're covering more net. But, you know, there are things that we can do. We can look at the chest and arm. We can look at the pants, and maybe we can streamline those a little bit more and hopefully bring some of that open area more to the shooter's eye and maybe get a half a goal more a game, maybe put this to bed for another 4 or 5 months and somebody else will bring it up.
Chris, sticking with the goalies, and hockey traditionalists are going to love this question. If goalie protection is a concern, which it is, has the NHL at all considered banning composite sticks or reducing composite sticks and reverting back to the wood sticks?
Want to go back to the old wood sticks. I love it. you're one of about a third of our general managers, which means which is a tell that we still have some old guys on that group. But you know what? That horse is out of the barn, fellas. I mean, I retired in 2001, and we were using aluminum shafts with wooden blades. And these sticks now, and I mean, I still play with the guys on Wednesday mornings and using composite sticks. I mean, all it really does for me is I can dump it in the corner a little harder than I used to with the wood. But these guys, you know what it is the guys at the top end, the McGinnises and the Brett Halls and the guys that could really shoot it, they still shoot it the same. It's just the middle guys that shot at 85 or 90 are all now shooting at over 100. So, hey, the shots are getting harder by everybody across all aspects of the players. But you know what? I think the goalies just have to go back and talk to the guys that played in the mid-'80s and realize that just because you feel a shot hit you doesn't mean that your equipment's not good or protective enough. I remember Kay Whitmore, who actually, ironically enough, is in our department, the guy that's in charge of trying to fix this. He'd come home in the summertime and his hands would be blue, and you know, he'd have broken knuckles, and he'd have welts all over his shoulders. I mean, that's what goaltending was. And if you didn't have that, then you weren't making enough saves, you know. So I think the equipment has become more of puck blocking now and not necessarily for protection. And I think there's ways we can kind of bring that back a little bit, and that's the place we're going to start.
Hey, Chris, what grade would you give the coach's challenge so far this year?
Well, to be honest, it wasn't one that I really thought that would be as successful as it has been. And I give a lot of the credit to the referees
for actually looking at the play again and being able to reverse their call. A lot of people, including myself, thought that, you know, once they make these calls, even though they'd be able to see something that would give them obviously that second look, they might be stubborn enough to stay with their call, knowing they didn't want to be proved wrong. But the guys have done a really good job. You know, it's been a lot of work from a technological standpoint, mm-hmm. you know, rigging 30 arenas and both dressing rooms with the Hawkeye systems. And for us to be feeding video from Toronto to, you know, the referees, monitor in San Jose and Columbus and Edmonton, I didn't know how the heck we were going to do it, but it's working. I think, and echoing what the general managers said a week ago Tuesday, they think it's, you know, we put it in place to get rid of the, you know, the 15-foot offside plays that make the game look silly, that we didn't have rules to kind of help those plays and goalies getting bowled over and not having the ability to play their position and pucks going in the net. But what we found is now we're taking down goals that are two inches offside. You know, we're having conversations and complaints from teams where they think one night a goalie interference is called and the next night it's not. Well, that we told them that would be the case when you have 35 different varying opinions on what goalie interference is. So I think for a quarter of the way into the season, it's been okay. It's been successful and one that, you know, with the learning curve, most guys, teams and players included, are starting to understand a little bit better.
Our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is Chris King, Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations for the NHL. Chris, sticking with the coach's challenge rule, if there was one thing you could change about the rule that's been implemented so far, you know, what would that be? You know, do you think maybe, you know, the puck over glass, the delay of game not being reviewable, you think you'd go back and maybe make that a reviewable play?
Well, that was all discussed, guys. You know, I look at what we are able to look at now as far as video review for goals. You know, there's seven things that our group can look at as far as pucks going in the net. And, you know, that's high sticks, kicks, pucks off gloves, off the official, in regulation time, pucks completely over the line. It's been that since I got off the ice. And I think it's worked because we've kept it to a small, you know, a small sample of what it is without, you know, officiating too much from Toronto. And I think that's what's worked. We knew there was other things that a coach's challenge could help within the game, but what we wanted to do is, A, try something in a small scale, and that's where goals that were scored on potential offsides and goal interference came to be. We've talked about pucks over glass. We've talked about a lot of different things, but right now I think it was important to get this thing working and working right, and seeing if it would work, and if we found that it did, then we can expand on other things. And that's kind of been our focus, is let's get it right first, and then let's see where we can take it.
Chris, there's obviously been lots of talk about increasing the size of the nets as a way to increase scoring. Do you see the NHL increasing the size of the nets over the next 5-10 years?
Well, if they do, I'd be really upset, and they didn't do it in, you know, in the 80s and 90s when I was playing. I would have I had a hard time hitting what was there now. But you know what? It gets some conversation. It's probably the easiest thing we can do. But we've got a lot of traditionalists within our decision-making group, us being owners and general managers, and you know, it has been talked about. We've built them. We've tried different ones. You know, 4 inches higher, a couple inches wider. Rounded posts, smaller posts, you know, we've built them. We've tried them. We've used them in R&D camps. So it's not something that we're not aware that we could do, but it would change the game. It would change the history. It would change the records. And it's something I think that we want to look at other aspects before we do something so radical and drastic. But, you know, if it's hard to say. Now, you got to understand, hockey operations we're the reactive group. We do what our general managers suggest and the competition committee and our owners. So we have to explore and look at everything. We do have opinions, our group, but really they're not important. We're not the decision makers. We're the guys that take care of the requests, and we'll explore that if that's something that has to be done. But right now, I think they want to look at goalie equipment and some of the rules to see if we can't get some results that way first.
Chris, you know, the NHL has made changes. As you mentioned, they react to what the GMs say. So the offside rule, the touch-up offside came back. And in terms of goalies playing the puck, has there been any thought to possibly letting the goalies, getting rid of the restrictions on playing the puck behind the goal line and letting them, you know, roam wherever they wish, and possibly that creating maybe some chances by goalies misplaying the puck farther from the net?
Well, you know what? There are some guys that that are very good at it, but the ones that are in there now haven't been able to do it because of that rule with the trapezoid. And Marty Brodeur was by far the guy that was the most vocal when they put that rule in. But it was part of the package, as you well know, in 2004-05, when we had that rules package to try to increase scoring in our game and chances. And there are a group of goalies out there that you do see when they go out there, some of the mistakes that they do make. They don't handle it very well, so it might give us the odd opportunity, the odd giveaway, but you know, we're always looking at ways, and we're always mandated to protect our players and especially our goaltenders. And I think if you took that away and we had more goalies roaming, A, you have the potential for more goalies getting hurt by collisions, and then you have more potential for some five-on-five situations when you do touch a goaltender. So there has been conversation, but it hasn't really gained a lot of momentum from our group of general managers. They seem to think the goalie's job is to stop pucks, not pass them.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Chris King. Chris is the Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations for the NHL.
Now, Chris, earlier you mentioned you were talking about the goal scoring, and it's down a little bit. And I remember we were talking about this during our NHL This Week show, and I thought that it was much ado about nothing, really. I can really appreciate a 2-1 game or a 1-0 game. Do you think the media cares more about that lack of NHL goal scoring this year more than the fans do? Meaning, is this more of a media-driven issue than anything else?
Well, I think so, but I mean, it's not fair to say that that's exactly and solely where it's coming from. We certainly hear a lot, and then we have to be reactive and answer the questions and answer the questions of what we're going to do to fix it. And there are people within our game that would like to see a few more goals. And I mean, I agree with you. When Jonathan Toews scored twice in the 3-on-3 to win 1-0 games, they were pretty good hockey games. I enjoyed watching those games start to finish. So I think we have to be careful what we wish for. You know, looking at some of the old games that are 10-8, they're not great either. But, you know, teams are just so well coached now, and players don't make mistakes. The only time we see scoring chances or potential goals is when somebody makes a mistake out there, you know, and we've put rules in place since I came to the league in 2001 where you try to take the ability of the coaches away, and then, you know, the hurry up line change and not being able to change your lines on icings. I mean, it takes the ability of the coaches to match lines, and there's ways that we have improved the game that way, because the coaches are just so good. I mean, you can teach defense to a lot of these great players. You know, you see what Barry Trotz has done with Ovechkin in Washington over the past couple of years. But it's so hard to teach offense. You're either a gifted goal scorer or you're not. So the best thing for coaches to do is try to close things up and try to, you know, find ways of forcing the other team to make mistakes so you can get some offense. So it's a fine line to walk, you know, but listen, I really think the game's in a great spot. I think we're watching, you know, arguably some of the best athletes in sports every night. The speed of the game, the characters we have in the game, the great young players in the game now, we're in a pretty good spot. And I'm always worried that we react too much to what we hear and what the media might want, and take away from a pretty good game that we're seeing each and every night now.
Final question for you, Chris. And has the NHL given any thought or significant thought to changing the point structure to better reward teams for winning in regulation? You know, I personally like 3-on-3, and I like 3-on-3 especially more than shootouts, but it does, determine where the team's going to finish in the standings, and the play certainly doesn't resemble a 5-on-5 game. Has the NHL given that any thought?
Well, we've talked about the three-point system. We've looked at, historically, we've gone back and looked at years and see where teams would have finished with a three-point for a win system. And it's changed things. So
It's nothing new, nothing that we haven't looked at over time. We actually have some general managers that would like to see players get credits for wins in regulation more so than, you know, and as well as winning the three-on-three, being more weighted than winning in the shootout if it gets that far. So with the new three-on-three, again, it's something that we said we'd try for a year. I like it too. I agree with you. I think it's very entertaining. You know, we've seen coaches try to coach it now, and then as soon as some guy misses a net and there's a turnover, all hell breaks loose. You watch the games now, and you've got 18, you know, grown men making $5 million on average standing up for 5 minutes on the bench like they did when they were in, you know, Pee Wee and Bantam. So I think the players like it too. But you know what? We've looked at all that, and I think it's something we'll continue to look at because it doesn't change the game all that much. But there is an element of our general managers that would like to look at it again.
Chris, as an addendum to that last question, in terms of playoff positioning and playoff tiebreakers, it's regulation and overtime wins. Any thought to, you know, keep the 3 points, you know, the system the way it is in terms of points, but maybe make the tiebreaker for playoffs just be regulation victories as opposed to...
That was exactly raised in our meeting this past week and something that we're going to look at. You know, you can't start the season and make changes even a quarter of the way through, but we'll crunch the numbers at the end of the year and see where teams end up. And you know, for maybe teams should be rewarded more for winning games in the first 60 minutes. So that's something we're going to look at. It was something that somebody suggested and something that we said we'll give them a follow-up in March at our meetings and then an end-of-the-year result and maybe something that we could potentially look at doing going forward.
Well, we will look forward to hearing the answer to that question. Chris King is the NHL's Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations. Chris, always appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us, and hope we can do it again soon with you.
You guys got my number. You know how to get me.
Thanks, Chris. Take care.
Okay, take care now.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, coming up, Arizona Coyotes general manager Don Maloney will join us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We just heard from Chris King, Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations for the NHL. In case you missed any of that, it's available for download on iTunes and on tsn1290.ca and, of course, on our website, illegalcurve.com. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, Dave Hempstead is performing. I've seen Dave numerous times. He is absolutely fantastic. The 7:15 p.m. show is sold out. Tickets, a few tickets only, are still available for the 10 p.m. show. Check it out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Gentlemen, we were just talking to Chris King, and part of the interview touched on three-on-three.
Great interview.
Yeah, great interview. Part of the interview touched on three-on-three overtime. And, of course, earlier this week, the NHL announced that the All-Star Game is going to have another new format.
Love it.
Really?
Absolutely love it. Why not?
The new format, of course, going to be three-on-three mini games during the All-Star Game. The four divisions will be playing each other, and then the two winners will play each other for the championship, where the players will split $1 million to the winning team.
Not bad.
For these guys, they don't care. Is this going to make you watch? Richard, I know that you're sort of like me and more on the cynical side. You know, does this garner your attention to the All-Star Game any more than it would have before?
No.
Okay. That's the cynical Richard I know and love.
Well, I mean, I don't know why anybody watches this game, but, I mean, well, it's for kids. For kids and sponsors. It's for corporate Canada and America and for children to watch, and that's fine. I mean, don't get me wrong. If people want to watch it, by all means, I'm just not going to sit on a Sunday afternoon and watch some random three-on-three tournament with a bunch of NHL players. I mean, take the weekend off and do something else.
Well, I think, Richie, the question should more so be, is this three-on-three tournament a better alternative to the regular five-on-five game where really nobody cares who wins and players are not really trying hard because players are trying not to get injured because the game doesn't mean anything, right? Mm-hmm. So to me, that answer is yes. I would rather see the four divisions have a three-on-three tournament, make it a little bit more exciting. And Richie's right. It's about the fans. It's about young kids watching the game. It's a showcase game, right? It's an opportunity for players to have a couple days off from the grind of the regular season, right? And it's an opportunity to see other players and have fun and, you know, showcase their skills. And yeah, of course, it's a TV event. It's a media event. Mm-hmm. But I like it. I like how they've decided to kind of have a fresh spin on this tournament. And as we know, over the years, we've seen North America versus the world. We've seen the Eastern Conference versus the Western Conference. We've seen different variations, Richie, of the format. And I think this is the first time we've seen 3-on-3, obviously, because 3-on-3 overtime just came into the NHL this year. 4-on-4 is something that we never saw at the All-Star game. So,
my favorite All-Star game was 2014, 2010.
When they didn't have any All-Star games. I knew that. I saw that one coming from a mile away, and I agree.
My favorite All-Star game was when Owen Nolan pointed and scored on Hasek.
Well, and isn't that truthfully the only thing you can remember of the last dozen All-Star games?
Well, yeah, because the games don't mean anything, right?
Nobody
remembers in 2007 who won the All-Star game because it doesn't matter. It's not like the Stanley Cup Finals where they're playing for the Stanley Cup. So why not have fun with it, right? That's what I like about what the NHL and the NHLPA have done. I think they've realized that they need to freshen up the format of the All-Star game. And they said, well, hold on, 3-on-3 overtime is pretty exciting. Why don't we bring this to the All-Star game, make it a little bit different?
Because, I mean, players still care about 3-on-3 overtime. They don't care about the All-Star game, even with $1 million on the line for the winning team. I mean, $90,000 for most of these guys is not significant money.
But that's what I'm saying.
Well, it's not true. $90,000 is not for these guys, it's not insignificant money.
It's not going to make them play much harder. I don't think.
Make them play harder. Yeah,
really?
Probably.
You think that they're going to play harder for the entirety of a game now because there's $90,000 on the line for each of them?
A little bit harder if there was no money on the line. Well, there was very little before. Was there anything before?
I don't know.
Drew, let me put it this way. I'd try harder if you offered me $90,000 every show.
But $90,000 is a significant amount of money
even
for you.
So,
if
Drew,
I offered
if
you 99
play,
cents,
play,
would you play harder?
If you were to play Shinny with Ezzy on the outdoor rink and he said he'd buy you lunch, you'd buy whoever loses has to buy lunch, you'd play harder.
Fair enough. I'll grant you that point.
By the way, to answer that, you could give me anything and
yeah,
I'll try harder.
Pretty
give
much
me a Timbit, give me a burger, give me an Illegal Curve sandwich, just give me a yo-yo, anything.
Really, a yo-yo? That's a random comment.
Yo-yos are fun,
I suppose. And as a follow-up to the 3-on-3 overtime, the players got a concession out of the league, and that is going to be that starting in 2017, I believe, the NHL will have a bye week. So between between January 1st and February 28th next season, the NHL will institute a bye week for players where they'll get about 5 days off in the middle of the season.
Yeah,
your thoughts on the bye week and being introduced to the NHL?
I've got no problem with that at all.
Wouldn't the NHL just be better off if they scrap the All-Star game and use that as the bye week?
Well, I mean, yeah, that would be the logical one, Drew. I think the NHL should and follow the NBA and move away from.
They still have an All-Star
game. Move away from back-to-back games.
Oh, I thought you were talking about scrapping the All-Star
game. No, move away from back-to-back games. And so I think if that resulted in getting rid of the All-Star game and providing, getting rid of the bye week but getting rid of back-to-back games, I think you'd improve the quality of play. I'm not sure a bye week is that helpful. I would take those extra days.
And build them into the season?
Yeah.
And we should mention, Drew, not the bye week isn't going to happen at the same time for all NHL teams.
No, it's over a 6-week period. Yeah. Every team will have 5 days off.
Right, so the bye weeks are going to be staggered.
Yeah.
Right, so you're not going to see the NHL go dark for 5 days. So I agree with Rich. I have no problem with it. It gets them re-energized for the second half of the season, which we know is a grind. So, again, that's a little give and take with the NHL and the NHLPA giving them that bye week. But, again, I think to have players refocused and re-energized it can't be a bad thing.
As we go to break, here's Jets coach Paul Maurice talking about the bye week. When we come back, Arizona Coyotes general manager Don Maloney is going to join us.
I'm just going to make an assumption they thought beyond the, hey, let's get 5 more days off. Like, if you take a look at our schedule, we got a 2-day practice block at the end of February, and we won't have one for the remainder of the entire year with a back-to-back thrown that we play every second night for the last 6 weeks of the season. So can't see squeezing 5 days off in that block, so it's going to have to come before, somewhere between January. I'm gathering they've thought about it. I think that coaches might be a little further ahead of the curve than people give them credit in terms of rest. I think 20 years ago when you first came in, you ground them every day, every day. Well, I took a job on November 7th and gave them their first day off December 14th. And the only reason I gave them the day off is Brendan Shanahan came in and said, man, we need a day off. You got to give us a day off. Never crossed my mind. Give them a day off. Not once. We were practicing that next day. It hadn't crossed my mind. We gave them the day off. I think we won 4 out of 5. We're not in the business to hurt players anymore. Rest, recovery, and the injuries is one of the primary things that we think about every day. And I don't see how if they can do it, if this can be done, then great. If we get a better on-ice product during the days, in the games, great. If that means as coaches we have to pull a bunch of practices to get that product, that's fine too. But we'll just wait and see how much higher quality of product when we have rested players. And I don't know that I've heard in a long time, the games are easy, but this guy's killing us in practice. The games are hard. The travel, I know everybody thinks we fly first class and it's great, but the wear and tear on the body and the travel and the TV time game starts and all those things have been a factor. So I'm just, you know what, really positive attitude here, and I'm going to say they factored all those things in, and with the end game being that we're going to get a better game out of these guys because they want to play better. That's what they want to do too. They want to perform well. So it must be a good thing.
Third and final hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. H&L following us. Rick Ralph with the pre- and post-game show, and the three-headed monster of Bayak, Nighy, and Edmonds with the call for tonight's Jets-Coyotes game here on TSN 1290. Waiting to hear from Coyotes general manager Don Maloney. He's supposed to be giving us a call any minute now, so as soon as he does that, we will bring him in and talk about this Arizona Coyotes team off to an important and an impressive performance so far this season, as we outlined in Hour 1, this Coyotes team residing third in the Pacific Division with a 10-8-1 record. Actually, a good record, a better record away from Gila River Arena, 7-4-1 on the road, whereas they're just 3-4 at home, which might speak to the home disadvantage that the Coyotes have.
Yeah, it's going to be great to talk to Don Maloney, guys, because as we talked about in the first hour of the show, Coyotes made some moves last year before the trade deadline that are really paying off this year. Anthony Duclair being the major one, Richie coming over in the Keith Yandle trade. You know, Max Domi, of course, was drafted right before Josh Morrissey. We were there in the New Jersey at Prudential Center in Newark. Many people thought the Jets were going to take Max Domi, and he's been excellent, certainly at the top of the list of NHL rookie scoring leaders. So it's going to be interesting to talk to Don Maloney because, you know, that team has gone through so much with different owners and, you know, the arena situation, the city of Glendale City Council, and all of that. And they've managed to right now have themselves in a playoff spot, right? It's truly impressive. And they've gone through a lot there. And the one kind of consistent thing has been Don Maloney and Dave Tippett, right? So I think it's really been fascinating to watch the Arizona Coyotes. Everybody wrote them off this year, and they just keep picking up wins, and we saw it the other night in Montreal.
Yeah, and, you know, we actually had Don's brother on earlier. Was it 3 weeks ago now? Dave Maloney from
For the Rangers broadcast.
MSG, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's a Maloney family reunion here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still waiting for Don to give us a shout. He's a busy man. No doubt, but hopefully we'll bring him to you in the next couple minutes here on the program. You know, interest going to be a good battle, I think, tonight. This Coyotes team with, you know, they're precocious, you know, young and precocious with Max Domi and Anthony Duclair. They might not know that they're supposed to be, you know, a bottom feeding team in the NHL. If you were to talk to them at the start of the year and you were to talk to the pundits, you would say that the Coyotes are going to struggle. But, you know, the players don't necessarily know that. So they go out and they do their thing. And, You know, Domi, of course, people remember him. He was of course, born here in Winnipeg. And he tweeted out a picture.
Were you at the hospital, Drew?
I wasn't at the hospital, but he was, because he tweeted out a picture earlier today of, it's the famous picture of Timu Solani holding him as a newborn.
Yep.
That people have seen. So it's, you know, an old Jets 1.0 reunion here with Ty Domi, of course, playing, and then Max being born here in Winnipeg. So I'm sure an exciting opportunity for him to return to his birth city. And of course, so many ties between these two teams and the Coyotes organization being, of course, the Winnipeg Jets 1.0.
Yeah, and Domi and Duclair are talented rookies, but I mean, we talked about Martin Hansel. This team still has a lot of good veteran players. Right. And sure, Shane Doan might be approaching 40 years old, but Shane Doan is an excellent hockey player, and Mikael Bodker is a good player. Antoine Vermette, even though he's struggling this year, he's a good kind of third-line glue guy for you at this point in his career. And they're led by Oliver Ekman-Larsson, an excellent defenseman, and Michael Stone, who's an underrated defenseman. Also, speaking of guys that are born in Winnipeg.
Right.
So this team is a lot better than they were last year. And if you remember last year, the Arizona Coyotes, in most games, even though they played hard, they skated hard, they were you could basically look at the Coyotes on the calendar and you knew that you were probably going to get the win if you gave a pretty decent effort. That's not the case this year. Domi and Duclair obviously have infused the team with youth, but it's also a team, I think, that has more to prove. I think Dave Tippett, you know, from listening to interviews with Dave Tippett this year before the season started, I think he's a guy, he has a lot of pride, and he wasn't happy with the way the season finished in Arizona. I'm not saying that the Coyotes expected to win the Stanley Cup last year, but I don't think anybody expected the team to be that bad, right? Along with Buffalo and Edmonton, they were one of the bottom feeders of the NHL. This year, you know, Dylan Strome gets drafted, and he's obviously not in the NHL right now, but they have a good stable of prospects. Richie mentioned Nick Merkley as another one that they drafted in the 2015 NHL draft.
Yeah.
The future
Kelowna
looks
Rockets,
bright in Arizona. Yeah. You can see where this organization is going. Last year, I think, was a low point for this franchise, and this year it's nice to see them competitive on a nightly basis.
Yeah, I would agree exactly with what you said there. This future certainly is bright for the Arizona Coyotes. Still waiting on Don Maloney. Hopefully we'll bring him to you in a couple minutes. Let's shift focus briefly, and we'll talk about some of the other issues going around the NHL while we're waiting for Don Maloney. Oli Mada, we talked about the Penguins on Tuesday.
Awful.
And, you know, Penguins.
That was scary.
Yeah, it was a bad injury. He's going to be out 3 to 4 weeks. He's been released from hospital. Sort of a bad timing all around. He gets hit into the boards just as the Penguins player on the bench opens up the gate, and he goes, you know, side first, upper body first into the open door and right into the edge of it. And so obviously out of the Penguins lineup for a number of weeks.
Yep.
You know, Oli Mada, you know, certainly had injury problems. He had that, he had a bout with cancer. So this is a tremendously talented player who just can't seem to stay healthy for the Penguins, and this is not a Penguins team that is deep on defense by any stretch of the imagination.
It was a complete freak accident, right? But it's unfortunate, guys, when you see that door open. We've seen that before at various levels of hockey. I remember when I was playing hockey, once that happened, it's scary, right? Because you open up that door and then you expose yourself to injury, right? And that's what happened. You're right, Drew. Oli Mada missed a lot of the season last year for the Pittsburgh Penguins. So for this Penguins team where the defense has struggled, it's an opportunity for a guy like Adam Clendenning, who came over in the Brandon Sutter trade. He's the guy that'll take Oli Mada's spot in the lineup.
Big drop off.
That's right, Richie. He doesn't have the offensive ability of Oli Mada, good defenseman, but you're talking about other guys having to step up, right? And Oli Mada, we talked about it, you know, at his age, at 19, 20 years old, you know, the fact that they're relying on a guy that age when nobody expected him to make the team last year is a problem, right? And Ben Lovejoy and Brian Dumoulin have actually done a really good job as kind of a shutdown pair. The Penguins have won their last couple of games here, and they're doing okay. I don't think they're anywhere near where they want to be, Richie. If the playoffs started today, this Pittsburgh Penguins team, I think, has a lot of problems. And, you know, Malkin started to get it going a little bit. Crosby scored a goal the other night, but it's only his third goal of the season. I think there's a lot of question marks in this lineup. But, yeah, Oli Mada, one of the up-and-coming young defensemen in the NHL, it's really unfortunate that he has sustained this injury.
Yeah, they're playing good team defense, but they need him to be able to play and be a serious contender. And we talked about the other issues that the team has faced, and, you know, I thought that Mike Johnson will last the season, but this certainly won't help in that respect because you're losing one of your top four defensemen.
And right now, aside from Chris Letang, you don't have any true offensive defensemen out there, Richie. Like Ian Cole, more of a kind of stay-at-home defenseman, right? And Ben Lovejoy.
That? Like, I don't know, Mata's like that. He's not like the Letang level by any means. I mean, he can produce some offense, but he's not going to be your dynamite guy. So they are, I do agree, as if you're looking to slot somebody in, you want them to be able to bring some offense too.
Yep, and they've struggled with that. And, you know, you got to wonder, you know, how they do in this little stretch here. I mean, they've still obviously got a good team up front. But, you know, a guy like Matta, as you mentioned, Drew, you never want to see a guy in his first couple of years in the NHL suffer this many injuries.
No, exactly right. Another defenseman injured comes from the Florida Panthers. That's Dmitry Kulikov. He's out anywhere up to 2 to 4 weeks with a knee injury. Panthers were sort of a team that a lot of people had maybe as a dark horse in the Eastern Conference this season. 8-8-3 so far. So not a terrible start by any stretch, but, you know, they're playing in the, the top, you know, Montreal's doing well, Ottawa's continuing to play well, and Detroit and Tampa you expect good things from too. So the Panthers can't afford to fall too far behind, and Kulikov is an important piece on that back end.
Well, yeah, it's because like Pittsburgh, they don't have a lot of depth on their back end. So you have a guy in Kulikov who plays your top four right behind Brian Campbell in the second pairing on the left side. Without him, who takes that spot? They don't really have anybody to take that spot. So that's a big loss for them. And when you look at Ekblad and you look at Campbell and you look at Gudbrandsson, they have a pretty big drop off after those guys. You know, Willie Mitchell isn't the defenseman that he once was. I don't think he can take that spot in the top four anymore. So that is a big loss for Florida. Puck movement and skating is a big asset there. So like Matta, in that he locks up your top four, and Matta and Kulikov are different players, but they're both very valuable to their teams and top four defensive roles on teams that don't have a lot of defensive depth.
Yeah, Kulikov is a guy who struggled this year, and he was a guy that the Panthers were looking to trade, if you remember, a couple years back. But as Rich mentioned, this is a team that after Ekblad and Brian Campbell and Gudbrandsson, they're a little bit light on defense, and that's been an issue for them. Goal scoring has been an issue for them as well. There's a lot of young talent there, and you know, this Florida Panthers team is definitely an up-and-coming team, and Luongo has certainly stabilized the goalie position, Drew. But, yeah, I mean, for a team that is struggling right now, kind of just on the outside looking in for a playoff spot, they definitely need Kulikov out there. He's been a staple of that defense for the last, 4 or 5 years.
Guy Boucher, former Tampa Bay Lightning head coach, was fired this week, or in terms of international hockey, it's called released by SC Bern. He's going to coach Canada's Spengler Cup entry. Is he immediately the sort of the top candidate for any NHL head coaching job that becomes vacant?
I mean, he kind of was before, right? I mean, he basically had Toronto's job before Babcock said, okay, I want to go there.
Yeah.
So I think, I think he's pretty innovative, Drew. I like the fact that he's willing to take chances. So I would expect maybe not the top one necessarily, but I expect him to be in that three to top five range in terms of guys who can come in and give a team a shot. I do like maybe rub some of the guys the wrong way there at the end there in Tampa Bay, but I do like the fact that he's willing to try new things and he's pretty progressive. So I do see him coming back to the National Hockey League sooner rather than later.
He flamed out pretty quick in Tampa. He came in, he was the hot prospect. He came in, he took them to the 2011 Eastern Conference Final, and then midway through 2013, he was out of a job. Do you think maybe, time, he learned his lessons from his first head coaching position?
I think all coaches learn their lessons.
Sure.
Unless they're John Tortorella.
he still keeps getting jobs, though.
Yeah, he's a smart hockey coach. So as Richie mentioned, when you're a smart hockey coach, it's tough to keep them out of the NHL, right? And who knows if it's going to be this year or next year. But you certainly, as Richie mentioned, you see his name pop up whenever there's a coaching vacancy. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's back in the NHL soon.
Let's head to break. We're going to try and shuffle some things around, maybe bring Don Maloney in one of these last final segments. We're going to hopefully talk to Bruce Lupke, Brandon Wheat King's play-by-play broadcaster, coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. It's an IC Saturday. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program the play-by-play broadcaster of the Brandon Wheat Kings, Bruce Lupke. Bruce, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good afternoon, guys.
Bruce obviously brought you on to talk about our WHL team here in the province. Wheat Kings sitting second in the East Division so far at 14-7-2. You know, certainly not a bad record by any stretch of the imagination, but I think people expected more of the Wheat Kings this year, given how top heavy and how loaded that lineup was and how good their start to the season was. You know, so far, who do you think the two or three biggest threats are to the Wheat Kings this season?
Well, I think there's always pressure when you begin the season as the number one ranked team in the Canadian Hockey League. So unless you meet that expectation perfectly, people are probably going to be a little bit disappointed. But, you know, a couple of injuries for Brandon, particularly Tim McAuley, their leading scorer from last season, got hurt opening night, just got back in the lineup last night. I think that was a big loss and certainly affected the team. And, you know, I think they maybe haven't hit their stride perfectly yet, and yet you're still right there as far as a battle for first place. So you maybe look on the bright side a little bit in that regard. Prince Albert is a team that's just ahead of the Wheat Kings in the East Division, a point up going into action tonight. Just beat Brandon last Sunday, 3-2 in Brandon, which was kind of a first place showdown. They're probably a team that's a bit of a surprise this year so far in the fact that they are a first-place team. I think we thought they'd be a pretty good team, but I don't think we realized that maybe they were going to be a first-place squad like they are. And, of course, in the Eastern Conference, Red Deer leading the Central Division. They're, of course, the host for Memorial Cup next spring, and you know, they expected to be a pretty good team because of that fact, and they're certainly living up to expectations so far.
Bruce, we've talked to you, obviously, about Nolan Patrick in the past, and we're going to continue to talk to you about Nolan Patrick. Many have him going number one overall in the 2017 NHL draft. Two-part question. How is he handling that pressure, knowing that everyone is pegging him to be that number one overall pick? And how has he developed so far this year? He's got 25 points in 23 games. How has he developed compared to how he was producing last year?
Well, I think he's been pretty decent so far this year, to be honest. The one thing, you know, and I mentioned the Tim McAuley injury, you know, when healthy, Tim McAuley is the Wheat Kings' number one center, and Nolan Patrick slides into that number two spot, which I think is a perfect spot for him at this juncture of his career. It allows him to maybe continue his development rather than, you know, facing other teams' top defense pairing or top-line matchups. You know, and because of that, I think there's been a little bit more of a struggle for Nolan this year. Not that he's played poorly by any stretch of the imagination, but maybe hasn't been as comfortable in that top spotlight role that he was kind of thrust into for a 20-game period. And I'll be pretty interested to watch him here in the next stretch. I think Brandon's got 12 games left before their Christmas break. Now that Tim McAuley's back, how he maybe slides into that secondary center role and see if he continues to produce or maybe even better the clip that he's been at. He's got all the attributes you'd want in a top-end player. He's got some size. You know, eventually I think he's going to fill out and be a guy that's a 6'4", 220 or 225-pound center with skill and really good at both ends of the ice, good in the face-off circle, everything you'd want in a player. He's just got to, I think, just make sure that the development curve remains on a nice keel and not maybe try to push him too quickly.
Bruce, Ivan Provorov is obviously a very gifted player, drafted high in last year's first round by the Philadelphia Flyers. They now have quite a stable of young defensemen in their system. Just how good is he? Would you consider him to be top three WHL defensemen?
I think he'd certainly be in the conversation, top three or top five. You know, he's a guy that really controls the play when he's on the ice, really good at carrying the puck. And, you know, you hear, and, you know, he obviously moves the puck well, makes good passes, all those kind of things. But the other thing he can do, at least at the Western Hockey League level, is he can skate the puck and himself out of trouble, especially in the defensive zone. And that's, I think, a pretty unique situation to have, a unique skill to have that he has. And I think that's only going to help him moving forward to the next level. You know, he plays on both special teams, really does everything you want. The one thing, you know, he's still developing again. He's not an overly big guy. He's about 6 feet, 200 pounds right now. Maybe could, you know, develop his shot a little bit more. He's pretty accurate with his snapshot. Maybe doesn't have the power to slap shot that you would want to see at an NHL level. I know the Flyers are really, really, you know, interested in his development. Ron Hextall's been to Brandon already this season to watch him in person. Shel Samuelson, their director of player development, been out a couple of times for week-long look-sees with him and to work with him a little bit. And, you know, I think they're pretty high on him, and I think they feel that he could maybe be in their lineup as early as next season.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Bruce Lubke, the Brandon Wheat Kings play-by-play broadcaster. Bruce, Jace Horlick is a second-round pick of the Florida Panthers back in 2014. He's leading the team in scoring. He's over a point a game, as he has been for the last couple of seasons with the Wheat Kings. What position do you see him playing when he gets to the NHL level?
Well, I think he's going to be able to play either way. You know, I think the way the NHL game is played now, he's probably a little smallish to play in the middle, although he has done that occasionally with Brandon during his time with the Wheat Kings. But he's only about 5'11" and 190 or 195 pounds, so I think he's going to end up being a bit of a winger. You know, he's you know, got some offensive skill, obviously, as you can attest to by the points he's producing. He's got a little bit of grit to his game. You know, he's a bit of one of those guys that's a bit of a pest for the opponents to play against, which I think, you know, helps him in what he wants to do as a player. You know, the interesting thing is he went to Florida's camp this year, and, you know, I think in his own mind, in fact, he told me this before he left, was he kind of felt that he was close to maybe earning a contract with Florida, and at least that hasn't happened yet. And, you know, I think they feel he's a big part of the organization moving forward. I don't know what their contract status is at, if they're, you know, close to the limit or what have you. But it's interesting that, you know, he hasn't signed his entry-level contract yet. And I think that's the next step for him to get that in his pocket. You know, it'll be interesting to see as we move closer here to late November and that December 1st announcement for the Canadian Junior Team Selection Camp comes out, whether or not he's going to be on that. He's, you know, had the opportunities to play with Team WHL, go to the summer camp with Hockey Canada, all those kind of things, but he hasn't been able to get to that next step where he's had the opportunity to go and showcase himself and try and be a part of the World Junior Team. And it'll be interesting to see if he gets that opportunity this year.
Bruce, Drew mentioned Jace Horlick and John Quenneville, who was drafted the same year by the New Jersey Devils late in the first round. He was also invited to the Team Canada Junior Camp this summer. Who do you think has a better chance at making Team Canada, Quenneville, Horlick, or both?
Gee, that's a tough question. You know, I think Horlick probably has more of a chance because he's more of a regular winger. You know, and as I mentioned, he played center occasionally, but he's played mainly wing with Wheat Kings. And I think that's where there's, you know, maybe more of an opportunity with the World Junior Team. John Quenneville has been playing wing this year for Brandon, but has mainly played center, and I think maybe projects as a center at the pro level, and maybe that could hurt him as far as, you know, his chances at the World Junior Team. The other thing, unfortunately, for John was he was injured when they had the CHL Canada-Russia games in the Western Hockey League earlier this month, and so he didn't get that same chance to showcase himself in front of the Hockey Canada brass like Jace Horlick did. So I think that might prove to be in Jace Horlick's advantage as well.
You know, Bruce, you mentioned Jace Horlick not having signed the entry-level deal. Tim McGauley, who you also mentioned earlier in the interview, he signed his entry-level deal earlier, I guess, October now with the Washington Capitals. I guess two-part question. How did he look last night in his return from injury? And you did allude to how important he is, but can you speak to what he brings to the table for the Brandon Wheat Kings and their, you know, their hopeful trip to the Western Conference Final and then the Memorial Cup?
Yeah, Timmy was he was a free agent, so he went to Washington's camp on a tryout basis, and obviously impressed the camp in September because you know, they signed him to that entry level contract in the early part of October. He's a guy that you know, I just think he's an overall really solid player. I think he really took a big step forward in his offensive game last year. I don't think any of us really saw him coming out and being a 100-point guy a year ago. Always kind of thought he would be a really responsible two-way player, maybe score in that 70 to 75-point range. But he really took his offensive game to the next level, which I think has really allowed him the opportunity to move on and become a pro hockey player moving forward. Plays both specialty teams, plays both really well. good penalty killer. You know, the old cliche these days now is a 200-foot guy, and he's exactly that. I thought last night his first game back didn't show any rust after being out of the lineup for 8 weeks, and you know, looked like his normal self. I don't think there was a lot of rust or any concerns about him at all, and he played a pretty normal game for what we expect from Tim.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Bruce Lupke of the Brandon Wheat Kings. He's the Wheat Kings play-by-play broadcaster. Bruce, I wanted to ask you about Stelios Mateos. He was drafted first overall in the WHL draft 2 years ago in 2014. A tremendously talented player. The Wheat Kings, you sort of stole that pick from the Saskatoon Blades as part of a trade. You know, how has Mateos looked in his first full WHL season?
He's looked pretty good. He got the game-winning goal last night in the win over Regina last night. He you know, went and played at the World Under 17 Hockey Challenge about 3 weeks ago, I guess it was. They didn't have the team success that they wanted with the Canada Black team. He ended up with 4 points in 5 games, 2 goals, 2 assists. It's interesting, you know, first overall pick. I think there's almost an expectation that he's just going to step into the lineup and immediately be an impact guy. And I mean, you look back to last year and the impact that Nolan Patrick had in his first year in the Western Hockey League. And, you know, that 1998 age group, like Nolan Patrick, and there's a few other guys in the Western Hockey League that were from that 2013 Bantam draft, Brett Howden and Moose Jaw, Sam Steele and Regina, Tyler Benson out in Vancouver, for example, they really came in and all were good contributors to their respective teams in their first year. And that is, I think, more of an exception than a rule for a lot of those youngsters coming into the league for their first year. You know, I think there's going to have to be a little bit more patience with Stelio for him to develop into that kind of an impact guy. I think he'll eventually get there. It's just going to take him a little bit longer than maybe Nolan Patrick was, for example. You know, I think he's looked comfortable, not out of place for sure. And, you know, he's been up and down the lineup a little bit with some of the injuries and other situations. He's played both in the middle and on the wing. He looks comfortable playing both spots. So certainly that versatility helps him in the early going in his Western Hockey League career. I think he's going to end up being a pretty good player and just going to take probably a little bit longer, like I said, than what we saw from some others.
Bruce Lupke is the Brandon Wheat Kings play-by-play broadcaster. Bruce, always appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks very much and great insight into the Wheat Kings. We'll do it again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Bruce. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Rapid Fire.
Going to do rapid fire a little bit earlier than normal this Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, but that's okay. We're still hoping to get Don Maloney on to join us, so we might interrupt midway through and go to Maloney, but that thing is, you know, quite fluid, of course, here on the program. 2 months ago, the Leafs claimed defenseman Frank Corrado off waivers from the Vancouver Canucks. Since then, according to Jonas Siegel of TSN 1050, Corrado has been stuck in the middle of a disconnect between management and head coach Mike Babcock. Management would like to see him in game action, but Babcock keeps him in the press box night after night. Is this disconnect between Leafs management and the head coach doing a disservice to Corrado's NHL future?
Coach is coach to win, right?
Yeah.
So are you going to let the coach do his job, or are you going to not let the coach do his job?
Well, I mean, I think that's why you have a coach, I would argue. If it's otherwise, management would be making all the decisions.
And, I mean, not most coaches don't have a 8-year contract like Mike Babcock does, mm-hmm. to give him the security to maybe play the guy anyways if management wants it. But once you let management dictate what's happening on your roster, it's hard to get that control back. It's kind of like the players. If you're going to give them all the control, it's going to be hard to get it back.
Sure, the horse is out of the barn at that point in time.
So, I mean, I have no issue with him not playing a guy based on the fact he doesn't think it'll be the best team out there to give him a chance to win. I don't really know anything about Frankie Corrado's game. I know he was claimed and everybody went crazy about the fact that he didn't sneak through waivers. I mean, granted, saw the Canucks defense the other night, so I don't know why people are so excited about it. But, I mean, there is some skill there, and I'm sure Mike Babcock's going to make him earn it. And there's, you know, Mike Babcock's like any other coach, guys. Mike Babcock has a doghouse, too. You know, Yuri Hudler was in there for a while, some of the defensemen of the Red Wings right now. Henrik Zetterberg wasn't in it because he was used all the time but didn't love him. So, you know, he's not, you know, I think he's the best coach in the league, but he has his guys he doesn't love, and let him do his job. Obviously, the job he's done there so far is a pretty darn good one.
Yeah, and the fact that Richie Henrik Zetterberg can be anywhere near the doghouse shows you that Mike Babcock isn't afraid, you know, to let a player know how he's feeling, right?
Doesn't discriminate.
Right. So Frank Corrado is a guy that he's a young defenseman, and, you know, as Richie mentioned, he was a guy that the Vancouver Canucks weren't that happy to lose, right? And when you look at Corrado, it's a situation, I think, right now. I don't necessarily know if he's in the doghouse or not, but I think it's a situation where Corrado just can't get into the lineup. I mean, there's other defensemen ahead of him right now, Morgan Riley and others, right? So Toronto Maple Leafs have actually started to play some pretty good hockey over the last couple of weeks. So, you know, hopefully he gets into the lineup, but he's obviously someone they thought of enough to go out and claim him, right? So tough situation always for a young player who wants to get into the lineup, right? We saw that with Nick Batan here in Winnipeg.
Sure. Sticking with the Leafs, James Reimer ranks fifth in save percentage among goalies with at least 10 starts with a .933 save percentage. He's third in even strength save percentage with .948. He has a .951 save percentage over his last nine games.
Stats are you gonna
read here, Drew? And one more. And is 5-0-2 in his last seven starts. Should James Reimer be the clear-cut number one goaltender in Toronto? And secondly, is he the long-term answer for the Leafs in net?
No, he's not the long-term answer in net. Should he be the clear-cut starter? Sure, for four games until he stinks and then they play Bernier. I mean, this is just Toronto goalie talk.
Well, but I mean, his numbers over the last, you know, seven, nine games.
Drew, the guy's been in the league how long? 7 years? 6 years?
So you're saying he's a flash in the pan on occasion.
I like James Reimer. Is that like, want to be backup netminder to challenge the number one guy? I'm not going to be convinced that he's something different now after a 10-game span of success. I hope. I mean, he's supposed to be a great guy, and I hope he's successful. But I'm not changing the organizational plans based upon him playing well right now.
And the reality is, James Reimer's been better than Jonathan Bernier, as you mentioned, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
So he's clearly going to get those starts. He's earned that, right? But you know, at his age in his late 20s. You know, he's probably not the answer long-term. You know, they have a guy like Bebo in the system. If you remember, he was a pretty good junior goalie, but, you know, we don't know what he's going to be. So the Leafs right now, I don't think, have a long-term goalie that they know 3, 4, 5 years down the road is going to be their goalie. For right now, Bernier's not playing very well. We saw him struggle the other night, letting in that long shot goal, and Reimer's been good. So good for Reimer, because a lot of people thought he was going to be traded even as far back as a couple years ago.
Yeah. On Thursday night, Alex Ovechkin scored goal number 484.
He's getting closer to 700, Richie.
Breaking the tie with Sergei Fedorov for most goals scored by a Russian-born NHL player. When he scores 700, as you and I can go out for drinks that night. Does this accomplishment, Richard's not invited, does this accomplishment make him the best Russian-born NHL player of all time, and if not, who is, in your opinion?
Hold on, I'll jump in here right off the bat. We talked about this last week when we were talking about the Hockey Hall of Fame. I think Sergei Fedorov is the greatest Russian of all time, and I think Alex Ovechkin isn't yet, but I think when his career is over, he will be. And I think that's because he'll go down as the greatest Russian goal scorer of all time. You know, there's been some great ones over the years. Pavel Bure is one of them. Fedorov is one of them. I still
McGilney,
yep. Going back to Harlamov back in the day in the 1970s. But as far as I'm concerned, Fedorov was the best. And, you know, he had the four Stanley Cups. Alex Ovechkin's got to get some more Stanley Cups, I think, before he's in that conversation. But I think, to answer your question, you know, in a roundabout way, Drew, by the time Ovechkin's career is over, I think he will be considered the greatest Russian player of all time.
It's going to be tough to argue with that. I mean, I didn't see Vladislav Tretiak play. I mean, people who are older than us would tell you that he is the best Russian player of all time,
yeah,
being the netminder. And then got the KLM line and Larionov.
Might want to throw Fedosov in there, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're talking about guys like, yeah, exactly. You know, Fedosov, different guy. I think Ovechkin, I agree with Ezzy, if he keeps on this track, will likely be the best Russian player of all time. I think when he passes Fedorov here, it's important to note Fedorov played center, Ovechkin played wing. Fedorov came below his hash marks more than occasionally, mm-hmm. and Ovechkin is recognizing that there is a zone that's not the offensive zone. So and Fedorov was an excellent defensive player. So I don't think those two goal markers now. Granted, Fedorov played in an era where goal scoring was easier, but I think there is a distinction there to make. Even so, I mean, Ovechkin will likely, his numbers will be incredible, and his impact on the game. I think Ovechkin's legacy, however, will be affected by the fact that as of now he doesn't have a cup, and I picked Capitals to win the cup, so I think that will change. And his teams in the Olympics have struggled significantly.
Paul Stastny of the St. Louis Blues broke his foot on October 16th and has not played since. When he does return to the Blues lineup, he will be sporting special guards on his skates called shot blockers.
Yep.
With shot blocking,
that's a creative
so,
name.
Yeah, very creative name. With shot blocking so prevalent in today's NHL, should players wear as much protective equipment as possible to prevent injury while blocking a shot?
Well, this is a catch, right? Because it's like shoulder pads. You're putting on better shoulder pads. We kind of talked about Chris King to protect yourself.
Sure.
Protect, quote unquote. But in reality, is it really adding any more protection, or is it becoming kind of a weapon? You hear Don Cherry kind of knocking that elbow pad against it. Is it for protection, or is it armor? And if it is, then again, that's getting in the way of scoring. Because if you're not worried about getting hurt by blocking a shot, then you're going to block every shot. It's like the baseball players who have the elbow pads, like Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
All the steroid stuff and all the allegations aside, he would lean over the plate with his elbow, and he'd get any pitch he wanted on the outside corner. Why? Because he didn't care if he got hit on the elbow.
He wasn't going to feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the answer to that, Drew, is yes, because anything that you can wear to protect yourself is a good thing, right? It's going to prevent injuries. And by the way, you've seen players in various leagues wear this type of stuff. This isn't a new thing. They've worn, the shot blocking, that the extra piece of protective equipment around the side of the skate or at the front of the skate, right? So I think anything you can wear to add years to your career is a smart thing. And obviously the Blues are going to be happy when they get Stastny back into the lineup. He's a great player. It's been difficult to watch him miss a lot of the season.
That's the thing about St. Louis, as you talk about Stastny missing time, Jaden Schwartz missing time, Shattenkirk. Yep. I mean, they've done pretty well considering that's the significant injuries they've faced.
Sure. As of Thursday night, the Philadelphia Flyers have the worst offense in the NHL.
It's unbelievable.
Averaging a league-low 1.79 goals per game.
That's a defensive problem, not an offensive problem.
So the answer. So how surprised are you that a team with Claude Giroux, Jakub Voracek, and Wayne Simmonds cannot score goals?
Still surprised, but my bigger issue there is the defense. The style of play has changed, Ezzy, to try and protect the netminder and play a better team defensive game with Dave Hackstall there. They don't have the defense when you get the puck to the forwards to create the offense. Now, it doesn't mean that the forwards aren't having a bad year and need to be better, sure. And they should improve on that. But that is a bigger issue. You've seen it with certain teams. You know, Colorado, last year they had a bunch of skill up front. They couldn't get the puck up to those guys. You struggle.
Yeah, I agree. And obviously the reason why their goals per game is so low is because Giroux and Voracek started so slowly. As you mentioned, Drew, they're starting to come around. But Sean Couturier, this year he's been upgraded to second-line center. He struggled. I think he's only got 2 goals. Sam Gagne was acquired from the Arizona Coyotes. He struggled. They've had a lot of guys on this team that have struggled. Braden Schenn, he's been kind of hit and miss. He had a good game when he was here against the Winnipeg Jets, but he's not exactly where he probably wants to be offensively. So they have a lot of guys that are underperforming. And as Rich mentioned, that defense has had trouble moving the puck. So all these things are contributing to this. But Drew, by no means did I think the Philadelphia Flyers would be at the bottom of the league in scoring with guys like Giroux and Voracek. So, I'd expect that goals per game to go up. But certainly I think the Philadelphia Flyers are going to be in tough to make the playoffs right now.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll preview tonight's Jets-Coyotes game some more, talk more about tonight's main contest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. Of course, H&L will follow us, and then Ralph. Rick took a shot at us earlier, but that's okay. We still love Rick.
What did he do?
He accused us of not understanding how to work. When we started, came on air a couple minutes early. He accused us because we hit the wrong button. He accused us of. So we'll let that slide. We still love Rick. That's the important part, right?
I'd be more concerned if Rick wasn't taking shots at us.
That's true.
By the way, speaking of shots, you were at we haven't had said this on the air before. You were at a charity event the other week.
Was I?
At the Booby Ball charity event.
Oh, right.
And you saw one of the Jets players, Mark Stewart, was there.
He had a great mustache.
And you had a good line. I figure you should share with our listeners.
I don't remember.
Remember what the line was, the joke?
Not really.
You went up to the bar?
I'm not feeling really well, Richie. What was the line?
You weren't even there, Richie.
Well, as he told me the line, I thought it was hilarious. That you went up to the bar to order a shot, and that Mark Stewart blocked your shot.
Oh, right. That was a good one. That's good.
What was your joke?
Was it?
In fact, you don't remember it, then it was 2 weeks ago is slightly concerning.
I had a few beverages that night.
He had a few beverages. You got to cut Izzy some slack tonight. He has been playing hurt for the last almost three hours.
I feel terrible right now. It's unfortunate. I'm going to have to go get some cold effects or something.
Yeah, there you go. So something to make yourself feel a little bit better there. Anyways, tonight's game, Jets and the Coyotes, a 6 p.m. puck drop at MTS Center tonight. What's the key matchup that you're looking forward to here? What's the key matchup the Jets have to be victorious at to come away as winners tonight against the Coyotes?
I think the matchup on the scoreboard will be the most important, Drew.
Thank you. That's good analysis. I'm glad you're here.
Well, yeah, that's the question.
Yeah.
If you look
appreciate
at it, Drew.
Hang on, that bus just right over top of me there. Yeah.
If you look at it, I think you're going to see obviously a steady diet of Ekman Larson if they can. Get him on the matchups on the road against the little lad Wheeler line, Drew. And then I think you're probably going to see Arizona want to get Mihalik and Dalbec, not your best second pairing, out against the Shifley-Stafford pro line. So I think, again, that's we talked about that earlier in the show. That's where you're going to see Paul Maurice and Pascal Vincent try and get the matchups that they want to create some offense there. And then you maybe see some softer matchups for Ehlers and Thorburn and Bermistrov. When I look at the other way around, I think it's an interesting Arizona kind of balances their lines a bit. Again, not stacked by any means, and the Jets balance their defensive pairings. If I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, you think, okay, maybe do Enstrom and Myers draw Hanzel, Duclair, and Tobias Reeder? I think you probably see Byfuglien and Party against that line because we're going to have to be moving Hanzel in the middle and how much of a force he's been and how big and how hard he is to move. So with Party and Byfuglien, you have an easier chance of doing that. And I think you might see more of Myers and Enstrom up against the Domi, Bodker, Richardson line. A little bit more of your speed. Bodker and Domi can be really dangerous in transition. Myers and Enstrom being able to skate with them and keep up with them. I think that's likely what you'll see. And, the Jordan Martinook, who we don't know a ton about, but, he skates well. And Tyson Nash talked about that earlier in the show. Him, Vermette, and Doan isn't a line to snooze on, so Trouba and Stewart are going to need to be on their game, whoever they match up against as well. So there'll be some interesting matchups tonight here against the Arizona team that isn't necessarily deep, but the way that they've structured their lines makes it there's no easy shifts by any means.
Yeah, it's not going to be an easy win for the Jets, Rich, but as you mentioned with all the matchups aren't as big of a concern because you know that right now the Ladd, Little, Wheeler line is playing well, and now that Perreault, Shifley, and Stafford, that line has been put together, and they had a really good game a few nights back against the Vancouver Canucks. You know that these two lines are going to provide offense. You're not worried about that. And then right now with Thorburn, Bermistrov, and Ehlers, even though that's not a line that we expect to necessarily stay together for the entire year, I thought they were pretty good against the Vancouver Canucks. So this Arizona Coyotes team, again, I think this game will be won 5-on-5. I know that you saw the Jets take one too many penalties against the Vancouver Canucks. In fact, they gave them five power plays. Mm-hmm. I don't expect them to take that many penalties. I think this is going to be a game that the Jets will be happy to win 3-2, 2-1, something like that. And we know Andrei Pavlik is going to be in the net tonight. I thought he had a really underrated game versus the Vancouver Canucks. I know everyone talked about the new Perreault-Shifley-Stafford line with Shifley and Stafford each getting two goals and assists. But I thought Pavlik was quietly really effective, Richie. And sure, he didn't make too many spectacular saves, but he was very solid because, as we know, that Vancouver Canucks team, they still have a few guys that can put the puck in the net. Even if Radim Verbata wasn't in the lineup, they've got a lot of good young players there. So I think this game will be 1-5-on-5, and it's a big game for the Jets. They got to continue their play from the last game, and as we know, they got to make hay in this homestand here, and they got to keep getting wins here because they've fallen behind a little bit in the Central.
And some of these Central Division teams have been losing the past few nights.
And Nashville lost last night. They got I think they badly outplayed Columbus and still lost 4-0, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
some of the teams have been losing a bit, and so you have to take advantage of that. And it's a big game because of your confidence. A big game early in the season, November 21st. Yeah, but the teams are getting have a lot of ground on you. You have to gain it. You have to beat teams below you. You have to beat teams at home. And with teams having lost around, you have to take advantage of that. So, I'm not going to say here we're by any means in a must-win situation, but this game is important for this team, and it's not just some November game that And you'll look back and say just a bunch of the same as all the others. It's not.
Yeah, well, and like you said, it is too early, you know, to some extent to look at, you know, games in hand and everything else along those lines. But the Jets will have played, you know, 21 games tonight. And
we talked about the record they needed, Drew, on Wednesday's show.
Yeah. It's a difficult one. And
you basically
this
got to go 2-1 wins to losses.
Yeah, you're right. It was about a 65% winning percentage is what you needed to sort of guarantee, you know, guarantee with an asterisk yourself a playoff spot, you know, come the end of April or so. In terms of the Jets' defense for tonight, you know, the Coyotes, as we mentioned, you know, they're led by, you know, Martin Hansel's got the most points for them this year, of
and
course.
That I don't expect that to continue.
You expect Domi or Duclair to take over that or Bodker?
I think Domi or Bodker would be the top two favorites for that.
Okay, so you look at that top line for the Coyotes, or really any of the top six for the Coyotes. Vermette's struggling, we know, but you look at the top, you know, the five out of the six without Vermette have all been performing quite admirably offensively. Who do you match up? How do you deploy the Jets' defense against these Coyotes forward lines?
Well, that's what I was saying before, Drew. I think Bufflin and Party may play against the Hansel line just to combat combat Hansel's size and up the middle. And I think that Domi and Bodker's speed lines where you're going to want to go Enstrom and Myers against, and they're not going to be the most physical, and you have to skate with them. So I think that matches up all right. You know, a guy like Brad Richardson, we haven't mentioned him at all. And I like his game. He kind of does a little bit of everything. Nothing flashy, nothing spectacular by any means. But
Vancouver last year.
Yeah, you know, a guy's useful in L.A., a guy's useful in Vancouver. I like that move by Don Maloney, who we didn't end up having on today. But
yeah, they sent their regrets, by the way. I just got an email from the Coyotes PR PR team. They sent their regrets on that.
That's all right. That's all right. And you
know, maybe we can have him on the Jets play the Coyotes New Year's Eve, so maybe we can have him on then.
Yeah, we'll rain check that one.
Are we going to be on the air on New Year's Eve?
Well, whenever.
You're on the air New Year's Eve with Rick.
I am.
The aforementioned Rick Ralph, who took a shot at us.
I always love ringing in the new year with Rick.
Well, when reached for comment about the same, Rick said no comment whatsoever. Anyways, continue on with your point.
No, I think he's the kind of guy who, you know, he helps winning teams, but he really can help any team. And, you know, it's a broad statement. Well, winning teams need a guy like play wing and center who can kill penalties, who can, you know, play a little bit 5-on-5 and play in your third line. But young teams, he shows you how to do the little things, and he's willing to, and it's a leader by example. And Tyson Nash on the air earlier talked about Shane Doan being like the preeminent leader in the National Hockey League. It's nice to have different guys, veterans, who can complement that guy, like a Vermette, and help with the leadership role. It's hard, if you've seen with Edmonton, to drop in one guy like a Ferentz into a young locker room and have him help with leadership. You need multiple leaders in the squad.
Yeah.
Well, it does.
Let's wrap up the program. Foo Fighters takes us out to end the show as usual. Big thanks to our guest today, Chris King, NHL Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations, Tyson Nash, Arizona Coyotes color analyst, and Bruce Lubke, Brandon Wheat King's broadcaster. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe, get a sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve and Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. For producer Rory and producer Chris, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless here on TSN 1290.